From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief. Hey, it's Chloe. August 2nd, 10 stories, 1 trial, 3 reviews, 6 takes you can actually use. Let's get into it. First, from the Forbidden Files. The Neuroscience of Personality, Why You Become Who You Are. The take-home message is that personality isn't a fixed trait you're born with. It's the product of many brain processes that keep reshaping themselves throughout life. Researchers have built this picture from decades of twin studies, large-scale genome-wide scans, and brain imaging work that together show a modest genetic baseline, roughly 30-50% of the variance in the Big Five traits, plus a huge role for experience, especially early life environments. Your temperament is the starting point. Infants already differ in how reactive they are, reflecting inherited patterns in dopamine and stress response systems. Those early differences set a canvas for the brain, but the paint comes from what you encounter: stress, nutrition, relationships, and repeated habits. Epigenetic mechanisms act like software, turning genes on or off depending on those experiences, so two people with similar DNA can end up with very different personalities. Neuroscience pinpoints a few key regions. The prefrontal cortex helps people high in conscientiousness stay on task by better regulating impulses. Meanwhile, older limbic circuits, especially the amygdala and reward pathways, underlie traits like extroversion and neuroticism, shaping how strongly you react to novelty or threat. The brain essentially tailors its wiring to the world it expects you to live in, which explains why childhood chaos can leave an adult feeling hyper-vigilant, while a calm upbringing fosters curiosity. Bottom line, you have a biological foundation, but you also have real leverage. By recognizing which habits and environments reinforce the patterns you want to change, you can gradually remodel the circuitry that supports them. Personality is a work in progress, not a final verdict, and the science suggests that intentional, repeated actions can shift the balance over time. Next, second, from New Atlas. New electronic thread revolutionizes discrete wearable medical monitoring. So there's this new electronic thread that's really small and can be woven into clothing, which is pretty cool. It's designed for people who need to monitor their health but don't want to wear a big bulky device. The idea is that it's discreet, so you can wear it without anyone noticing. This could be really helpful for people who are self-conscious about wearing medical devices, and it might even encourage them to use the technology they need. The thread itself is still in the early stages, but it's an interesting idea. It's not like a smartwatch or fitness tracker. It's more of a specialized tool for people with specific medical needs. I think it's worth keeping an eye on, just to see how it develops. It's based on a small study, so we'll need to see more research to know for sure how well it works. But the concept is promising, and it could make a big difference for people who need to monitor their health without drawing attention to themselves. I'm curious to see where this technology goes, and if it can really make a difference for people who need it. It's not a replacement for existing medical devices, but it could be a useful addition to the options that are already out there. Overall, it's a small but interesting development in the world of wearable technology. We'll have to wait and see how it progresses, but it's definitely worth paying attention to. Up next, third, from Science Alert. Your 3 a.m. wake-ups might have an ancient scientific explanation. Historians have logged thousands of references to first and second sleeps. People would go to bed after sunset, wake around midnight, spend an hour chatting, then drift back to sleep. Modern lab work backs that up. A 1992 clock-free sleep study and a 2017 field study of 21 people without electric light both showed a natural tendency to split the night into two segments. a 2025 microdialysis study of over 200 participants found cortisol keeps climbing, whether you're asleep or awake. So the classic cortisol awakening response isn't really a response to waking at 3 a.m. Later reviews point to hormonal shifts during menopause, low overnight glucose, and even modest caffeine or alcohol as triggers that can turn that brief wake-up into a longer disturbance. Practical takeaways: keep the bedroom dark, limit caffeine, alcohol, stick to a regular wake time, and if you're still up after about 20 minutes, get out of bed and do something low-key until you feel sleepy again. Cognitive behavioural therapy for insomnia remains one of the most reliable ways to break the cycle. And then, fourth, from Science Alert. Most isolated environments, microplastics are finding their way down to deep-sea hydrothermal vents. Researchers from the Korea Research Institute of Bioscience and Biotechnology found microplastics in 92% of animals living around deep-sea hydrothermal vents, including snails and mussels. These vents are 2,000 meters below the ocean surface, and the microplastics were found to be as deep as 3.42 pieces per animal on average. The most common type of microplastic found was polystyrene. The study suggests that feeding behaviour affects where microplastics accumulate in these animals, with snails having more concentrated amounts in their digestive organs, and mussels having more evenly distributed amounts. The researchers also found that microplastic concentrations varied between two different locations, with the Indian Ocean having significantly higher concentrations. This study highlights the widespread presence of microplastics in even the most isolated environments and emphasizes the need to reduce plastic pollution through improved recycling and alternative materials. Next, fifth, from Will Lockett's newsletter. Starship Launch 13 exposed its fatal Achilles heel. I have already covered how Starship's Flight Test 13 wasn't the huge leap forward SpaceX needed, but this launch demonstrated something crucial that the media has barely even noticed, let alone discussed, a major flaw with Starship's promised future. A fundamental problem so catastrophic, we will look back and wonder why anyone thought this launch vehicle would ever work. It isn't just me who has spotted this, though. Industry insiders, including ex-space shuttle engineers, have too. Up next, sixth, from MuseGuided. The things it took me decades to see. Summer is when things slow down enough that I can actually think. If I am in some remote Nordic region of the planet, it's ever better. I rest, I reflect, I explore and discover myself over and over again. A friend of mine collects lists like this, golden rules from the people she admires. And a month ago, she asked for mine. I said no, more or less. Then I found myself in British Columbia, with unstructured days and some odd new willingness, and I began. It surprised me how much came. Almost 100 in the end. And then, seventh, from Aporia. Roundup, who enjoys dark humour? So I found this study on dark humour, but it's actually about physical attractiveness and mortality in the US. Researchers looked at how people rated attractiveness in adolescence and found that those who were considered less attractive had higher mortality rates, even when they controlled for age, sex, race, and IQ. This relationship was partly driven by BMI, and it was stronger for women. It's a small study, but it's interesting because it suggests that physical attractiveness can have a real impact on health outcomes. The researchers aren't saying that being unattractive directly causes mortality, but it's possible that people who are considered less attractive may face more social and economic challenges that can affect their health. Next, eighth, from Jana Levin's Higher Dimensions. Live with Jana Levin and Kurt Jaimungal. So Jana Levin, the physicist, had a live conversation with Kurt Jaimungal, a mathematician. They talked about the concept of time, how we experience it, and how it relates to our perception of reality. They also discussed the idea of time dilation, which is when time appears to slow down for an observer in motion relative to a stationary observer. This is a fundamental concept in Einstein's theory of relativity. One interesting point they made is that our brains are wired to perceive time in a linear fashion, but this might not necessarily reflect how time actually works at a fundamental level. They also touched on the idea that time might be an emergent property of the universe, rather than an inherent feature of reality itself. They also talked about the implications of time dilation on our understanding of space travel and the nature of time itself. For example, if you were to travel at high speeds, time would appear to pass more slowly for you relative to someone who is standing still. This has some pretty mind-bending consequences when you think about it. It's worth noting that this conversation is more of a philosophical discussion than a strictly scientific one, so it's not necessarily a recap of new research or findings. However, it's a thought-provoking conversation that challenges some of our basic assumptions about time and reality. Up next. Ninth, from Rupert Spira, The Transparency of Things. One consciousness, innumerable views. So I was reading this article about how our culture assumes the world exists outside of consciousness, and that we all see the same physical world. But the author suggests there's another way to think about it. We all see the same world because we're all perceiving the same infinite consciousness from different points of view. They're exploring how this single consciousness could give rise to a shared world and all the different perspectives on it. The author also talks about the difference between illusions and what's unreal. They say that something can be an illusion, like a mirage in the desert, and still be real in some sense. It's just not what it appears to be. They use the example of a landscape in a film to illustrate this point. It's an illusion as a real landscape, but it's still real as a screen. This idea is pretty interesting because it challenges our usual way of thinking about reality. The author is saying that what we experience as the world might not be the actual world, but rather our own perception of it. It's a bit mind-bending, but it's also kind of liberating to think about. And then, 10th, from Carlita Shaw, Notes at Sea, number 13. Carlita Shaw's newsletter has seen a significant drop in subscribers, from 20,500 to 80,500 in just 10 months. Despite this, she's grateful for the 284 dedicated supporters who are the wind behind this ship's sails. The calm seas and lack of new subscribers have made it challenging for her to sustain the newsletter, and she's considering implementing a paywall for her content. She's asking her loyal readers to consider upgrading to a paid subscription or making a contribution to help keep the newsletter afloat. That's the read, small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. New here? Grab your own free feed at storyflow.com. It only takes a few seconds.